Hi, everyone. Welcome to this edition of Roar Lions Roar. I'm your host, Bill DeFilippo, joined tonight by my co-host, Matt Filipovits. Matt, what's going on?
Bill, I think like where I have my desk in my office is slanted. Like, I feel like I'm on an angle. So I ordered a level. So I'm waiting for my level to come tomorrow, and I'm excited to see if it is indeed slanted where I'm sitting. It feels like it is.
Yeah. So it's basically just like one of your arms a little bit lower than the other?
It feels off. Like, nothing's like rolling around. Like, I have a pencil at the end of my desk. It's not moving, but like, it just doesn't feel right. So I'm excited to find out, and I will let everyone know on our next episode.
Yeah. While we're talking about current or present episodes or former episodes, want to tell everyone how that draft went for you?
People doubted me. People hated on me. People laughed at me. And to them, I say, how are you stopping Tyler Warren Wildcat? Also, it was a completely vibes based activity for me. And I have the best vibes, I think, team wise.
All right. No, you don't. The quarterback cannot run.
He's not
with
the quarterback.
Ball. That is the answer to your. If he's playing Wildcat quarterback, then yes, that's
I'm
the quarterback.
This. I'm taking this up. I'm taking this up the ladder.
How are you challenging that? That's a rule. That's written down. Like, it's an objective
Listen,
thing.
7-on-7, like all sports, is always evolving. So by the time, maybe this time next year, this will end up being a good pick for me. So. All right.
No, it's not. So for those of you who missed our last episode, Matt and I did a 7v7 draft among players on Penn State's roster, broke it down. Each team got a quarterback, a running back, pair of wide receivers, a tight end, a pair of offensive linemen, then two defensive linemen, two linebackers, two defensive backs, and just one bonus player on defense. So far, the voting over on our Twitter account, you can still head over at RLR blog, see what the rosters look like, listen to that episode of the pod, obviously, and vote on how the teams are going. But what I'll just say is it's not going well for Matt. The voting is open until next Monday, I think. Yeah, until next Monday. So if you want, head over to at RLR blog on Twitter to do that. And we're going to do, it's not a game, but what we're going to do today is we're going to, at the end of the podcast, we have some listener questions that we're going to get through, but we're going to start by talking through the players who we think have the most to prove for Penn State this season. Obviously, we're coming up on a really big season for the Nittany Lions. This is probably as good of a chance to win the Big Ten as they've had in the James Franklin era. Of course, whether or not they do win it is a completely different thing. But they have a shot this year that maybe they haven't had in years past, partially because of Penn State, partially because of how it seems like things are going to shake out elsewhere in the Big Ten, particularly with Ohio State and with Michigan. So saying that, we are still entering a year where, despite that, Penn State's not the favorite to win the Big Ten East. Penn State's not the favorite to win the Big Ten. Penn State's not a favorite to make it to the college football playoff. So what Matt and I are going to do is talk about the players who we think have the most to prove for Penn State this season. And Big Ten football odds, I probably should have pulled this up before. Yeah, coming into this season, Matt, before we start going through that list of names, Ohio State's plus 165 to win the Big Ten. Michigan's plus 210. Penn State is third best odds at plus 500. Wisconsin has the fourth best odds at plus 650. And then things fall off considerably from there because then it's Iowa. When you look at this Penn State team, and we'll talk about this stuff obviously more and more in depth as we're filling out pods for the rest of this offseason. Do you think Penn State is super far off from being able to compete against Ohio State or Michigan this year? Why not?
Not at all. This is, I'll say it once, then I'll shut up. This is the window that I've been talking about for like a year and a half that they've been building towards. It's arrived. Like, this is the time for Penn State to make it. This is the most talented team we've seen them have. It's experienced. They're not going to be relying on underclassmen pretty much anywhere. Like, there's no real first-year player who has to come in and make an impact at any kind of position. Like, they're built to make this run. The schedule shapes up really well. Like, I loved the fact that by October 15th, I want to say, we'll be done with the non-conference, the bye week, and the Big Ten West. Like, the entire Big Ten East, the meat and potatoes of the schedule, all comes in one go. Like, the hardest part is going to come at the end of the year. So they have that entire first 6 weeks of the season just to get ready to compete with Michigan and Ohio State. So I think just this is the most talented roster. It's the best. The schedule is going to shake out for Penn State in all likelihood. And you know, they have the quarterback we think that they need to get over that hump. So I think Penn State has a ton of value. What was it? Plus what, Bill? Plus three something?
They're plus 500. Michigan's plus 210. Ohio State is plus 165.
I think Penn State's the best value of any of those three. So,
well, yes, naturally they have the longest odds, and they have a shot to do something. For the sake of the record, the rest of the Big Ten East, Maryland is at plus 4,000. Michigan State is at plus 12,000. Rutgers is at plus 2,000. There are actually five Big Ten West teams that have better odds than any of them, which I find pretty interesting. Two of them Penn State has to play this year, which neither here nor there. But yeah, I mean, my thing with this team is that I still think, and I think the odds reflect this, I think the overall talent on the roster reflects this, there's still a gap between Penn State and then that Michigan and Ohio State
team. How big of a gap, though?
Look at, I mean, I don't think Penn State's going to beat either of them.
Whoa, so are you serious?
I think Michigan, I think the fact that Michigan brings back most everybody from last year's team that really dominated Penn State, even though it's in Happy Valley, and they have a quarterback in J.J. McCarthy who has won the Big Ten, has, you know, 12, 13 games of experience under his belt, whatever it is. The fact that they have that stuff, I think, kind of offsets the fact that, you know, the game is in Happy Valley this year. I do think Penn State's going to be really competitive in that game, and in the Ohio State game, for that matter. But I don't think Penn State beats Michigan, and I don't – it's funny because Penn State's issue or big question, whatever you want to say, is also Ohio State's big question. And so I think they kind of naturally cancel each other out in terms of Drew Aller versus, you know, it's presumed Kyle McCord's going to be the quarterback there. So then you look at everything else in Ohio State other than running back and I'd say probably cornerback are just better and probably a defensive end are just better, like top to bottom of that game's in Columbus. So like, I think if that game was on a neutral field, I think Penn State would have a really good chance. I don't think Penn State would win it. I think Penn State would have a chance. Michigan kind of
this year.
I mean, they don't have to, like if they want to achieve a level beyond what they achieved last year, then yes, they have to at least split those games this year. I just don't know if they are going to, and we'll learn more and more throughout the course of the offseason as both these teams go through spring ball. You know, we're going to have a sample before the Ohio State game of six games and before the Michigan game of, I think, nine games of what these teams are. And, you know, things could be fluid, very fluid between now and then, whether those teams fall off, whether Penn State's a lot better, where those teams are a lot better, whether Penn State falls off, just whatever it is. So that's the bridge we'll cross to when we get to it. But in order to get to that bridge, Matt, it comes down to the players. And what we're doing on this pod is we're listing out the players that have the most to prove on Penn State's roster this year. And what I'm going to recommend we do is you're going to read your number one. If I have that player on my list, we will then pause and we'll talk about them together. Or we'll just kind of knock that guy off together. And if not, we'll just alternate back and forth between you and I. So for you, who is your number one player with the most to prove for Penn State?
So I'm going in the trenches. I think that if Penn State is going to beat Michigan and Ohio State, they need to take a very large step forward in the trenches. They took a massive step forward last year. There has to be another big one again this year to close that gap. And I think Olu's great. I think everybody else kind of, we know what they are. So I'm going to go with Landon Tangwall here as my number one guy. Do you have him on your list?
I had a list of honorable mentions, and I have one offensive lineman, so we'll save him for a bit, but no, I didn't have Tangwall on my list. What is your argument for Tangwall?
Tangwall is a very important piece, not only in like the overall story of Penn State football. He was the only lineman in his class. Like, that 2021 recruiting class has a lot of talent on it, but not a lot of that talent were the big boys who help you win. So he's carrying that torch first and foremost. He's one of the highest ranked offensive linemen Penn State has landed under James Franklin. And don't get me wrong, he played pretty well in the limited bit as a true freshman. And I know he played a lot of tackle. I don't think, played great in those first couple games at guard before he got hurt for the year. And then he missed all of last year. So I'm a big believer.
Most of last year. So it's worth saying that he got injured.
Michigan warm-ups.
What was it, like warming up for the Michigan game or something like
Michigan
that?
Michigan warm-ups. So he's had all this time to recover. I'm a big believer in the third-year bump. I've talked about it before. I think especially for guys along the lines, that third year is when you can really tell what they're going to be. And it's year three already for Landon Tengwall, which just feels crazy that we're here already with him. I love that he went through spring. I love that he went through the blue-white game, playing pretty much every rep he was asked to play. And I think if Penn State is going to have a dominant rushing game, and if they're going to keep Drew Aller upright, I think Landon Tengwall is going to be the most pivotal offensive lineman not named Olufoshanu.
I think that's a good pick. I didn't have him on my list anywhere, mostly because just I think there are guys ahead of him who, you know, for the purposes of this list, who are more important.
Also, sorry, real quick.
But yeah, I
protecting Aller's blindside. Like that, again, this all falls on the former five-star for me. And you need to protect your most important asset, which is Drew Aller. So another reason why I think he's the one with the most to prove in Landon Tengwall.
Yeah, and I think you look at the offensive line that Penn State's going to be trotting out there this year. And if you assume Olu is Olu, if you assume that, you know, Hunter Norzad is just a rock solid guy, played a ton of football. Caden Wallace, rock solid. You know, he's had his ups and downs, but a guy who's played a ton of football. But just basically, I think you could put Penn State's guards in this position because Landon Tengwall, like you mentioned, was all right last year. I don't think anyone is going to sit here and say he was like the second coming of some Hall of Fame interior offensive lineman. And I think, you know, probably say the same thing about Salim Wormley. I think both of them look like guys who were relied on to play a ton of football for the first times in their careers, which it happens. Like that's just a thing that happens in college football. That first year you can, it can be a learning experience, especially when you are going up against, when you're considered the weakness of your team. And we saw in that game against Auburn, when Penn State's offensive line was really cooking, that they could do some really good things. But I think that's a good answer. I think that if Landon Tengwall plays to his best, I think if Landon Tengwall is a guy who is able to stay healthy and is able to, you know, he got that taste last year and he got some good experience last year before he got hurt. And now he's in a better place physically and he has a better understanding of what's coming. I think he has the potential to be a really good and really important player. So I think it's a good pick.
Thank you. I think like third team all Big Ten is an attainable goal for him. Like if he's one of the 15 best offensive linemen in the Big Ten, Penn State's having a phenomenal season.
Yeah. And for me, the big thing is that like, I don't necessarily care if you're all Big Ten. I don't care if you're I don't want to say I don't care. I think that, you know, it's more of a nice thing than anything, but like, just don't be a guy who, when we're watching games, we find ourselves pulling our hair out and go, you know, I actually think, Caden Wallace is a guy who's been a good example of this. Like he's had some really good flashes, but there are games where it's just like, he's just not having a good game and we're pulling our hair out and going, it's Wallace again. I just don't want anyone being that kind of guy. And if you could just be a steady, consistent, rock solid level of a good football player, I think that's all you really need to be for Penn State up front, especially because, like, you know, I think Olu is a stud. So whatever. My number one guy, like, I think this is easy. The guy with the most to prove on Penn State's roster is Drew Aller. Like if like you mentioned, we want to talk about Penn State being able to beat Ohio State and Michigan. Football is a team game. Football is a game that depends on, can your 11 guys beat the other team's 11 guys over and over and over again. We saw last year, and, you know, no disrespect to Sean Clifford, we saw last year that Penn State had a guy who could sometimes beat the other team's defense. Sean Clifford had a very respectable season for the Nittany Lions, 64.4% completion, 2,822 yards, 24 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, 150.5 quarterback rating, career high in touchdowns, career high in passer rating, career high in completion percentage. And we saw that might not be good enough. That's not enough to beat Ohio State and Michigan. And in his place is the guy who I didn't read that piece on ESPN, but I did see it get passed around with Heather Dinich. Was the like thing in that piece that James Franklin thinks he has the guy to do that, or was that some editorializing?
I think as somebody who sat in on many Franklin press conferences, that was the closest I think I've heard him say like this is a guy who can do some different things. Like I don't think it was all fluff. I really do believe Franklin thinks he has a guy who has that next gear.
All right, so you look at what happened when you have a guy who is really, really good. You know, it's the good to great, great to elite thing that's been talked about here, other podcasts among Penn State fans over and over and over. We saw Penn State had a really, really good quarterback last year, and it wasn't enough. And to me, Drew Aller stepping in having never been a full-time college starting quarterback. The first snap that he takes, again, as you know, we'll do the dog and pony show, assuming it's him against West Virginia, not Bo Prabula, blah, 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 blah. Assuming it's him, that first snap he takes against West Virginia is going to be his first snap as a starting quarterback in college. And he is going to have one, two, three, four, well, two games before, a pretty tricky game against Illinois, and then playing against Iowa, and then probably what's going to be a sleepy nooner against Northwestern, just like the most annoying possible Big Ten West schedule that you can have. He's going to have six games before he has to go into Columbus, until he has to go, you know, a couple miles over that way from where I am right now, his hometown state, all that sort of, or his home state school, all that sort of thing. He needs to prove that he is better than what Sean Clifford was last year, even with, I think, the rest of the Penn State team being a little bit better than the Penn State team was last year. He has to prove that he is better than what Sean Clifford was if Penn State's going to compete for a national championship, if Penn State's going to compete in the Big Ten. If he can't do that, we're talking again, and maybe he does do that and it doesn't matter. But if he can't do that, we are talking again about a Penn State team that has a ceiling of 10 wins. And if Penn State wins 10 games again this year, I think that'd be a pretty good season. I know there are a lot of people.
I think that's a disaster season if they go 10-2.
Well, I think you're wrong. And I think if they go 10-2, and again, I need to see how they get to 10-2. I need to see what a Michigan is. I need to see what Ohio State is. If they have a 10-2 year where they make a New Year's Six Bowl, you know, kind of a replay of last season, I think it's going to be a good season. Again, I'll need to see how they get to that point. But if this expectation of Penn State being in this like mythical window where they've been shut out of competing in the past and they're finally here, and it's because they finally have the guy, man, the guy with the most to prove is that guy. The guy with the most to prove is the guy who is responsible for this. And like, I think it's Drew Aller. I think it's Drew Aller above everybody else on this team. And did he make your list at
all? He's on my honorable mention.
Okay. So why do you think he doesn't have more to prove than anyone else? If you are the one who says 10 wins is a disaster, they have to win at least one of Ohio State and Michigan, is it not on Drew Aller the notable difference between last year's team and this year's team to make sure they get to that?
All right, we'll rip this Band-Aid off. I think Drew Aller does not have to be light years better than Sean Clifford for Penn State to get over that hump. He's going to have an improved run game and I think a better defense. So I think he just has to, and I know I'm going to get yelled at immediately, he has to not turn the ball over four times at home against Ohio State. He can turn it over three times and Penn State wins that game. He can't do it the fourth. Like, for all this talk of Clifford's experience was so important, it got them one offensive touchdown at Michigan. Like, what was that experience really worth? That's just what it comes back to for me. This goes back to Fromm Fields. So my overall point with all this to say is, Aller is a very important player in the sense that he's the one who is going to take them over the hump. But in terms of the players surrounding him, they're going to have to deliver if Penn State is going to beat Ohio State and Michigan in that sub two-game season inside this broader crazy 12-game college football season. That's what it comes back to for me. Like, Aller doesn't have to win the Heisman for Penn State to go out there and beat Ohio State and beat Michigan. We've seen Penn State beat Michigan with pretty mediocre quarterback performances. When Penn State beat Ohio State in 2016, McSorley was like 9 for 17 passing. It was not that great of a game. Like, they don't need that to be successful. But I know for a fact they need a mauling offensive line to be successful. I know for a fact that they're going to need my next guy to really step up and help stuff the run moving forward. That's kind of what this comes back to for me. I don't think the quarterback is the biggest cog in this machine to make it go. I think if they're going to go the furthest, then the quarterback then kind of becomes this elevated entity.
I guess my question is, do you think that, you know, going back, you mentioned the 2016 Ohio State game, go back to that game and consider the game state under which that was played, where disgusting, nasty, grimy college football game, Ohio State made a ton of Ohio State was not Ohio State in that game. I'm pulling up the box score right now. Ohio State had 413 yards, 5.7 yards per pass, 4.2 yards per rush. Special teams blunders. They weren't great on third down. And I guess what my argument is there, and what my argument would be kind of for a game against Michigan, is no matter how good Penn State is, the way that college football has kind of moved to be so offense friendly, I just don't know if you can win either of those games without quarterback play that is, you know, if you don't want to say exceptional, it's fine. I will say productive. Mm-hmm. Like that 2016 game against Ohio State, Penn State lost the turnover battle in that game. Penn State got outgained by 150 yards. Those are things that, like, I just don't know if Penn State can win a game against Ohio State or against a team like Michigan when those kind of things are piling on top of it. And that's why I'm putting Aller number one, is because if you are boiling this Penn State season essentially down to two games, I'd be very worried about doing that because they have to go to Illinois at 11 a.m. Local time. They just have to play Iowa, and dumb stuff happens against Iowa. I don't think they're going to lose to Maryland, but going to Maryland 1 week before playing Michigan is just like every alarm bell is going off that game is going to end like 34-31 Penn State or something. But if you boil the season down to those two games, the thing that Penn State needs to win, because of what Ohio State is, because of the talent Ohio State has, because of what Michigan is, because of the talent Michigan has, is elite quarterback play. It is quarterback play that can take advantage of the fact that Michigan's probably going to be a better team in the trenches. Michigan, their back seven is going to be quite good.
Can I ask you a Michigan question real quick while you're going through that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Where does J.J. McCarthy fall for you in terms of most important players for Michigan? For me, he's like outside of the top five.
Oh, I think he's number one.
Do you really? Okay, I mean, think about their rushing attack. Yeah. Like with Blake Corum, I'm forgetting the other guy. Thank you.
Donovan Edwards.
Hassan Haskins, but I knew that was wrong. Apologies to Donovan Edwards. I think those two right there are what the offense goes through, and Michigan proved that they can win the Big Ten with that. Like, I think Penn State is built in a similar fashion. Like, I think you could drop Cade McNamara in there last year for Michigan, and they still perform at a pretty similar level.
Do you think Michigan beats Ohio State if J.J. McCarthy doesn't throw three touchdowns and no interceptions to the touchdowns and two interceptions?
I'm really glad you asked this, because I don't know how I feel about this, because that was not the Michigan team we saw run through the Big Ten. Like, that wasn't the same offense, it didn't look like to me. That looked like they knew McCarthy was a guy who could do that. So maybe my point is kind of moot in the end. But I just think there are more important players at different positions that led to Michigan's greatness. And I think a talented former five-star was dropped in there and performed well enough to be productive. And I think that's what Penn State can be.
Well, yeah, I think that, well, the other part of it is that I do think McCarthy is a talented quarterback. He was dropped into a situation where he could just like turn around, hand the ball off, and it was basically guaranteed
7 yards
that he was handing the ball. 7 yards he was handing the ball off to the guy who was I don't want to say the front runner for the Heisman Trophy by any stretch of the imagination, but a guy who, if he, you know, Blake Corum doesn't get hurt for, you know, late against Illinois, is able to play a full game against Ohio State and has the game that Donovan Edwards has against Ohio State, I wouldn't be surprised if he's right there.
Oh, he's the only non-quarterback in New York. And that's a huge accomplishment in 2022.
Yeah. So let's move on. We'll have plenty of time to talk our quarterbacks rest of this offseason. Who's number two on your list?
I'm going to keep it a little bit outside the box, but I think for good reason. And I'm going to go with Devon Ellis here because...
Okay, so my number two was Devon Ellis slash Kazai Izzard. So you start here, and we'll talk.
So this comes back to I'm factoring in like recruiting rankings and all that kind of fun stuff. Ellis was a top 150 prospect out of Maryland, a really big get for Penn State to go out there get a guy out of, I believe he went to DeMatha, to come in there and be that impact defensive tackle Penn State was craving. Like if you remember, this was 2019, so. Kevin Gibbons would have moved on. It was like Rob Windsor's breakout campaign when he came in. And Ellis, I think, really got hurt by when COVID hit and the fact that he lost his redshirt freshman season, essentially. And now he was behind PJ for an additional year with the extra COVID year. And now it's year five, and now it's his time. Outside of Caleb Artis, Devon Ellis is the only defensive tackle on Penn State's roster listed at over 300 pounds. Like, I think Izzard, I think Beeman, I think those guys are bigger than they're listed as. I don't know why they're not listed as bigger than they are, but I don't believe that they're listed at what they are. But for the purpose of this, you know, activity, Ellis and Artis are the only two ones over 300 pounds. Penn State needs to bulk up to stop the run. This has become a pretty noticeable problem. Illinois 2021, Michigan 2022. They need Devon Ellis to prove that he can handle this massive snap load and be a run stopper and a disruptor. His numbers last year I have pulled up right here. He appeared in all 13 games, and he had 15 total tackles, 2 tackles for loss, and 1 sack. He also forced a fumble. For how little he truly played, because if he was behind Hakeem Beeman, PJ Mustafa, and Kazai Izzard for, you know, certain stretches, I think it makes it tough to really know what he is. And if he can go out there and if he can play at a high level, this Penn State defense... The floor of it gets raised a lot. I don't know if Devon Ellis really raises the ceiling of this defense, but if he goes out there and he gives you, you know, 28 good snaps a game, the floor of this team goes through the roof.
Yeah, I put just Ellis slash Izzard. I put one of those guys. You just read the numbers on Ellis, 15 tackles, 2 tackles for loss and a sack. Izzard last year, 10 tackles, 4 for loss, and 2 sacks on the season. Disruptive. So they're a pair of guys. Yeah, they're a pair of guys that played a bit of football, put up some numbers for Penn State. But, you know, well, it's a thing that we mentioned a lot last year. It's a thing we've mentioned a few times this offseason. After Penn State played Michigan last year, James Franklin went into his press conference and took kind of the big picture approach and talked about guys needing to be bigger, stronger, more physical. And without saying it explicitly, it sure sounded like he was talking about Hakeem Beeman, because he is listed at 6'3", 256, which is not huge for a
defensive tackle. I don't think he's 256. Honest to God, I don't.
You look at Penn State's defensive ends, Chop Robinson, 6'3", 253, Zariah Fisher, 6'3", 257, Dennis Sutton, 6'5", 262. Like, Penn State has size at defensive tackle. It doesn't really have that, or at defensive end, kind of lacks it at defensive tackle, and Beeman's a big reason why. So next to him, the two guys who are going to get the first shot are Ellis and Izzard. And what, like you mentioned, Ellis 6'1", 302, Izzard 6'3", 291. Penn State just doesn't have a ton of beef in the middle of its defense. And that doesn't have to be the be-all, end-all. That doesn't mean that they necessarily have to walk in to a game against Michigan, a game against Ohio State, even a game against Illinois or a game against Iowa, and just assume they're going to get eaten up in just the middle of their defensive line. But they need at least one of these two guys to take this kind of step forward. That I'm not asking them to be an Austin Johnson type who or a PJ Mustipher type, whose mere presence is going to put two guys on you at all times, give one-on-ones to everyone else along the defensive line, make it easier to, you know, for someone to blitz from linebacker, from the defensive backfield, whatever. You just need to be big and physical enough that when the J.J. McCarthy, Cade McNamara, Kyle McCord, you know, all these various quarterbacks are putting the ball in the gut of the running back behind them, it's not an automatic 6-7 yards. And I don't know if Penn State's going to be able to do that, Matt, but if Penn State is able to get the kind of step forward they need out of one of these two guys, I think it's going to become a lot more plausible.
So I know you and I kind of conflict on safeties, but you know, I feel pretty good about that room with KJ Winston and Zaki Wheatley. Like, is defensive tackle your biggest concern defensively now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because at the same time, like, I think that when you are in the Big mm-hmm. Ten, you are going to go up against a bunch of teams that want to run the football. And, you know, I'm not concerned about safety so much as, like, I just don't think it's, like, a sure right. thing, because I think when you're losing a guy like Jair Brown, you have to replace him. There's obviously going to be some time that you need to make that up. But I'd say at defensive tackle, I have real concerns about Hakeem Beamon's size. I think he's good against the pass. I'm very concerned about him against the run. And I don't know who's going to be the guy next to him. Again, Ellis and Izzard are going to get that first shot, but do they have to play Jordan Vandenberg, who's at 286 pounds? Do they have to play Zane Durant, who is at 275 pounds, and just concede that you're never going to be big enough going against teams that want to be able to run the ball down your throat? So that's what I would say. Yes, I would say defensive tackle is easily my biggest concern. Yeah, on the defense.
It's going to be interesting. I think there's a lot of guys here who can play. I'm a big Hakeem Beamon fan. Like, I really want him to take that step. He was so good in 2020. But at this point, that's three seasons ago. Like, it may be time for me to move on. I mean, because Izzard can play, Elways can play, Vandenberg can play. I think Artis is ready to play. I mean, 6'3", I think he's 315. Like, if that dude even can just give you 7 good reps a game, there's a ton of value in that. Like, I think enough guys are going to be able to hold their own. They need a true disruptor. And I think it's going to be one of Elways or Izzard.
Mm-hmm. Has to be.
Absolutely.
So that was number two for us. Who was your number three?
Can I ask you, who is yours a receiver? Is yours yes. a returning receiver? Is it Keandre yes. Lambert-Smith?
It is Keandre Lambert-Smith.
He's got to be it for both of us. I thought about Agreed. Putting Theo Johnson here because I'm really expecting a lot out of him, and I think he can take a really big jump. But Keandre has to be the guy. Like, he is the fastest player. He is the best receiver that we know currently is on the roster. You know, maybe Amari Evans or Caden Saunders are better and they'll get there in time. But as we sit here right now,
maybe Dante mm-hmm. Cephas, the transition to FBS isn't a right. big problem, or to Power Five football isn't a big problem for him.
But Keandre has to be the guy. I really like how strong he came on towards the end of last season. Like, once Parker went down and Keandre Lambert-Smith emerged as this realistic outside threat and this realistic deep ball threat for Penn State. Real quick, also, I posted the Keandre Lambert-Smith Rose Bowl tutty on the blog Twitter account today. I'll be posting a couple different like touchdowns throughout the course of the offseason to correlate with like how many days left to how many yards the score was. So there's one coming today, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, that you'll probably enjoy from the same game. But he's...
Does it involve Nick Singleton?
It does. Yeah, wow. Who would have guessed? But no, listen, Keandre has to be the guy. I think he can be the guy. I have a lot of faith in Keandre Lambert-Smith after what we saw from him, towards the end of last season. And if he goes out there and if he gives them 68 catches, and if that leads the team and everyone else kind of just splits it up evenly amongst the other receivers and the tight ends, I think Penn State's rolling. I think Penn State can be 11-1 with Keandre Lambert-Smith as the lead dog in that pack.
So last year against Michigan State in Utah, Keandre had 8 receptions in those two games, 2 touchdowns, and 207 receiving yards. Sorry, I had it on my phone. Mess it up.
Also a passing touchdown.
All the year, he had 24 receptions. Also, we'll get to that, I'm sure. Lambert Smith had 24 receptions, 384 yards, and 4 touchdowns on the year. So in those two games, he had a third of his catches on the year. He had half of his touchdowns on the year, and he had about 53 or so percent of his yards on the year. And coming on late in the year is great, but you have to be able to build on it. And by all accounts, it's a matter of confidence with him. It's a matter of consistency. It's a matter of just all the stuff that makes you go from a guy who flashes to a guy who is relied on every game. And that's my big thing with Penn State's wide receiver room is we don't know right now if there is a guy for Drew Aller to rely on every single game. That includes the tight ends to an extent, but especially the wide receivers, because we don't know if it's going to be Keandre Lambert Smith. We don't know what they're going to get out of Amari Evans or, Harrison Wallace or Dante Cephas, among the guys who played and were productive a bit last season. Keandre Lambert Smith is going to have the first rip at this, the guy who's been in the program the longest, the guy who has caught balls from Drew Aller before. Dante Cephas is now probably called a football from Drew Aller, but the guy who has just kind of had the chance to do that. And he's had chances over the years and has never totally ran with them. In 2021, 34 receptions, 521 yards, and 3 scores. They need him, I would say, to be the guy that Drew Aller can rely on. Or they need someone to be the guy that Drew Aller can rely on. And Keandre is going to get the first rip at doing that. It has to be someone at receiver, right? Like, I would say him because he's been around the longest and this is basically the year for him. He either does it this year, he's probably never doing it.
Yeah.
And if he does, over the moon.
Agreed. Bill, you mentioned, Keandre Lambert Smith has caught passes from Drew Aller. That is true, but he has not caught a touchdown pass from Drew Aller. Can you name the 4 players who have caught touchdown passes from Drew Aller?
Amari Evans. Trey Wallace. Did Khalil Dinkins catch one?
Catch one, correct.
And then Catron Allen? Catron.
Not Tank Smith. Smith. Oh, God, that'd be cool.
Nope. Nick Singleton. Liam Clifford.
Who was it then? So I come back to this. There's a reason for this, not just to have like a stupid fun game. I think the fact that Theo has one and Trey has one means that, I'm sorry, Amari Evans, means 3 of probably Penn State's top 5 leading receivers have already caught that first touchdown pass from Drew Aller. Like, I think that rapport is already established there, and I think that's really important.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's reasonable. So we both had a list of honorable mentions. I have a good number of names on mine, so you just want to rifle through yours, and if there's anyone particularly noteworthy, I'll flag it.
Drew Aller was my top honorable mention. I left him off for reasons we discussed. The other one was Caden Wallace along the offense. I had him up there, and then like I mentioned, Theo Johnson. I think Johnson can be a like Mackey Award finalist. Like I think the guy's going to be that important to this offense. I think with how much of a threat Penn State's going to be to run, the tight ends are going to be open a ton, and I think that's just going to lead to Theo Johnson being a big impact player. And then defensively, I have Johnny Dixon as one that has to step up. And then I have Zaki Wheatley in here as well.
Okay. I put together just a collection of receivers who didn't play a ton last year, but are guys who are kind of unknowns to one extent or another. And the biggest unknown in the bunch, Caden Saunders. But I also put Liam Clifford and to a lesser extent, Amari Evans in there. I put Drew Shelton.
I thought about putting him on mine.
Just because I think it's if there is real competition along the right side of the offensive line for Caden Wallace's job, I think that probably says more about Drew Shelton than does Caden Wallace. I put a pair of guys in Zane Durant and Zariah Fisher, who haven't played a ton of football.
Good one with Zane. I need to think of that.
But are really, really talented. They played a little bit of football, but we haven't seen a ton of them. And then every linebacker not named Abdul or Curtis, I said. I put Cam Miller in there.
Okay.
Because we know Penn State has Kalen King, Johnny Dixon, Daquan Hardy at corner. And then with Storm Duck leaving, that made Cam Miller exponentially more important in Penn State's defensive backfield. Okay. So I put him in there. And then a group of guys that I think we've glossed over entirely, like this entire offseason. And I just put down the special.
I was going to put these guys in here, but I figured you would too. Yeah.
Riley Thompson and Alex Paquetta at punter, Alex Falcons and Sander Sahadic at kicker. Paquetta's punted a couple of times, but certainly nothing extensive for Penn State. I think Sahadic has maybe done a kickoff or two. I don't think he's ever
kicked a field goal,
but I'll double check that.
He made a 19-yarder, I think, as well. So I think he's one for – he missed from 57. Okay. I think he made a 19-yarder.
Oh, which, listen, you're putting a guy out there for a 57-yard kick, and he's not Jordan Stout. You're setting him up to fail. And then Riley Thompson and Alex Falcons are a pair of guys who have transferred up from, I believe, the G5 level. I know Thompson came from FAU and Falcons came from Columbia. So he came up from the FCS level. And then even if you want to put Tyler Dezanski, who's going to be replacing the immaculate Chris Stoll as Penn State's long snapper, like Penn State's entire specialist court is just a big old blank slate. And we have no idea what to expect out of that group, but it should make for an interesting, first couple of weeks as they kind of get that all sorted out. And I know that when, there are reports out of camp, when there are questions asked to Franklin, I'm going to be paying really close attention.
Punting has to be good. You're investing two scholarships in it. And neither of those guys are taking a redshirt. Yeah. They already have those secured. Like, punting has to be a strength, or else that's just bad roster management.
Well, two scholarships in Thompson and Paquetta. I don't have a huge problem with it, just because I think Thompson is gone.
He was a freshman All-American, but because he's Australian, his eligibility is weird. He's gone, and Paquetta is going to be a redshirt freshman.
Yeah, so like I don't have as big of a problem with it because it's kind of, it's both ends of the spectrum, and I believe they did it. That's what they did last year with Barney Amore.
Correct.
Memory serves. Also, Alex Paquetta is Italian, so we're a big fan of his. Do you know who else we're a big fan of, Matthew?
I'm going to guess you're going to say Home Field Apparel.
We are big fans of Home Field Apparel because they sponsor our podcast. They give us money. They want us to spread the gospel of how great Home Field Apparel is. They are our pod sponsor. They've been riding with us for almost a year now. We'll have to look back on the anniversary of the first time that we did a Home Field ad. But of course, if you're a listener of the pod, if you are a college sports fan on the internet, you know what Home Field Apparel is. They're a premium collegiate apparel brand based out of lovely Indianapolis, Indiana. The shirts are comfortable. They're unique. They take a ton of time to make sure the designs that they put on their clothing make you feel a little bit closer to your school. Matt, I am not wearing any Home Field gear right now.
I'm wearing the blog Tutty shirt. Shout out to our YouTube viewers who can see that. But I have a ton of Home Field stuff. I have a crew neck. I have multiple crew necks, some t-shirts. Most notably, my Take Me to Happy Valley crew neck is one of my favorites. And one of two crew necks I currently have on hangers in my closet.
Yeah, all my Home Field stuff's in my closet. I probably should. One of these days I will remember to actually like put Home Field stuff on before we do the Home Field read. So I'm not actually supported wearing the gear of homage. The reason I asked Matt that question was not so he could riff. It's because due to the way our podcasting tech setup thing works, I can't see him right now, so I can't see what his shirt looks like. Neither here nor there. If you want to get some gear from Home Field Apparel, you can get something from their Penn State line. They have Penn State t-shirts, they have Penn State crew necks, they have Penn State hoodies, they have a new Penn State hat, which is really nice. You should go ahead and do has very, very nice. But you don't have to just get Penn State gear. You can go and get gear from any school. I know there are plenty of people out there who went to schools elsewhere but are Penn State football fans. And maybe you listen to the podcast and maybe you want to get a shirt for your alma mater and you want to get a shirt for our beloved Nittany Lions. And if you want to do that and you're a new customer, you can use the promo code ROARLIONSROAR, one word, all uppercase, to get 15% off of your first order. Again, if you are a new customer, use the promo code ROARLIONSROAR, one word, all uppercase, for 15% off of your first order. Thank you again to Homefield Apparel for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Matt, let's get to some listener questions. We have a couple of questions about Penn State, about Penn State football, about Penn State other things, about dumb stuff, all sorts of things. We'll start with the football question. And for me, this is ground that we've covered over the years, but we have never specifically covered it here. So a question from Devin: does Bo Prabula get a Tommy Stevens package? And what that means, obviously, is that when Tommy Stevens was the quarterback at Penn State, he had his own special package. I believe it was called the Lion package, where they took advantage of the fact that Tommy was a really special athlete who was also a pretty good backup quarterback behind Trace. So do you think Bo Prabula gets something similar to what Tommy Stevens got during the Trace?
Yeah, I think that's a realistic, you know, thing to keep Bo Prabula happy and engaged. Like, I know he's a PA guy. I know that Penn State has always been his school, but I mean, you have 85 scholarships. If a guy's redshirt secured and he can help you get some points on the board, I think there's a lot of fun that can be had with that. I will say, I want to give a shout out to Coach Dan Casey on Twitter, at Coach Dan Casey. He is a phenomenal play of the day newsletter, where he just highlights straight up a play a day. And he has done a lot of like the old Joe Moorhead Penn State stuff. And he highlighted a lot of the two QB packages that Moorhead used to run with Stevens and McSorley. And there's definitely things that I could see working with Prabula in that mold. So, you know, realistically, we think that is, Bill, 5 games a year where we really see that package be used, but that can help you get points on the board. I think there's absolutely going to be a role for Bo Prabula to play in Penn State's offense in 2023.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that the assumption that a lot of people make is that if a coach is going to bust this stuff out, it's to try and catch Ohio State off guard, is try and catch Michigan off guard, is try and catch Iowa off guard. A lot of the times when you see this kind of stuff, coaches are like inherently pretty conservative. So I don't think we'd necessarily see it, you know, in a big moment against Iowa when Penn State is so desperate to catch them off guard that they do that. So I think we have it. I will repeat the point here that I made when Tommy was the quarterback, when Will Levis was the quarterback, and now with Bo is the quarterback. I hate taking off a wide receiver, running back, or tight end and putting in a quarterback in those positions just so you have the threat of being able to do something a little bit different out of there. I want you to go out there with your best wide receivers, best tight ends, and best running backs every single play and not make yourself a little exponentially worse at wide receiver because you want to have the threat of your backup quarterback doing something out of that. Especially because last season, Keandre Lambert-Smith threw 2 passes for 73 yards and a touchdown.
It's awesome.
Because we've seen Tyler Warren, another guy who, like Keandre Lambert-Smith, was a high school quarterback, show his ability to throw the football. I don't think it's necessary from a strategic perspective, and it actually hurts your team. But if you really believe in Bo and you really want to find a way to get him on the field, I don't hate the idea of, you know, they're up 35-10 on WVU in the fourth quarter. Let's have this be kind of the knockout blow. Or, you know, we want to put something on tape against UMass because Ohio State's the following week. Let's go out and do that. I just don't like the idea of doing it in a position when you're still like in a tight, tense football game.
Yeah, I get it. But also, I mean, like, Penn State didn't use it in, like, tight situations when the Stevens package existed. Like, they used it to, like, throw a passing touchdown to Stevens against Northwestern. Like, they used it to put Iowa away. Like, I don't think that if Penn State beats Ohio State, it's going to be because of a Prabula trick play. I just don't think that's realistic.
Yeah, and that's ultimately my thing. Like, at the end of the day, who do you want Drew Aller throwing a football to? Bo Prabula or Dante Cephas? Do you want him throwing the football to Bo Prabula or Tyler Warren? Or do you want to sacrifice taking one of those guys off the field so you can have that element of, ooh, what are they going to do with Bo? Like, that's why I think this is a little bit – why I think, like, conceptually it's a little bit silly. But at the same time, like, I think they're going to have it. I don't think it's going to more be like something they have on the last page of the playbook. They only turn to it in like very fun situations or something like that. Like, I certainly don't think it's going to be, you know, kind of the knockout blow that they go for, or it's going to be more the knockout blow and less like, we're desperate, we need to cook something up, let's go ahead and do that. Moving on to the next question from Will, will the 2024 class end up being a top five class? I'll be honest, this hasn't been, you know, we're still mid NBA playoffs, so that has basically all my attention right now. So what I do know is that Penn State, 12th nationally in on three, 6th nationally in 24/7, very, very good class.
Big class.
For the Nittany Lions coming in. Yeah, currently led by Quentin Martin out of Bell Vernon, some really good offensive line and secondary prospects. Yeah, just a really talented group of players. As I look through this, Matt, I'm not certain that it's going to quite be that. It's going to quite get to that level of good, but it does seem once again like James Franklin is putting together the kind of class that, like, you know, you get some really good football players out of it that you can build around for the next 3, 4, 5.
So last year they signed 3 5 stars in 24/7 in Singleton, Aller, and Dennis Sutton. And that one finished 6th in the composite rating. Like, they're not getting 3 5 stars in this class. I hate to say it. I'd love for that to be the case, but that's just not going to happen. So if they finish like 12 to 15, seems pretty good. Like, I'd like them to finish in the top 10. I'd like that to become, you know, the what's the proper term for that? I don't know. The regular? I don't know. But like 12 to 15 seems fair. I just don't see this being top. Even with this being probably 25 plus players, I just don't see it reaching top five.
Yeah. And like, I God, this is going to make it sound like I'm being a Stars Don't Matter person. They obviously do. But just like, put together the best possible class that you can. And if that means a bunch of 4 stars or a bunch of like high 3 stars or something like that, obviously you want to get a couple of guys who can step in there and like be program changing level recruits. And hopefully Martin especially could be that type of guy, but like, they've kind of earned the benefit of the doubt when you think about the team that they're putting together. Cause Kalen King, was a solid 4-star. Olu was a 3-star. Chop, you know, he was a 5-star, but a guy who transferred in. Like, they've shown that they have the ability to develop guys in a way that I find really impressive.
Exactly. So yeah, staff's built for that. Like, again, Dex, you know, Marcus Hagans, Troutwine, these are all guys who are at smaller schools who routinely put out all conference caliber players because they know what they're looking for. So
yeah. And I, you know, and the other thing is, success on the field very frequently begets success in the recruiting world. It's not a coincidence that last season Penn State was able to get, you know, it was a little bit of a smaller class, but they went swimming in some waters that we're not used to seeing Penn State go swimming, getting some really big name kids out of Florida, out of Alabama, those kinds of things. It's not a coincidence that starts happening after they have a really good year on the field. And they also had, a bit of a smaller class last year, 19 kids enrolling, 4 who I think are going to be enrolling soon, and then had some success in the transfer portal with Cephas, with Malik McLean being high profile as a storm duck before he decided he wanted out. So yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say Penn State's going to have a top five class. I would love it if Penn State could have a top five class. I want to see James Franklin really cook, really cook there.
Can I go on a tirade right here? I want to get your thoughts on something. I hate this idea that like Franklin is not a good game day coach, but he's an elite recruiter. Like, Franklin outperforms this team's recruiting rankings constantly. Like, this team constantly finishes like in like the 15 to 18 range recruiting wise, and like they've churned out 3 to 10 plus win seasons in the last 5 years. Like, I hate this idea that like, oh, Franklin can't get it done like on game day, he just recruits well. Like, first of all, that's a lazy take. Like, he's getting the job done on game day against the teams, except for the ones like literally nobody's beating. And second of all, like, he's recruiting to be like a top 15 team, and they play in like the top 10 range. Like, it's a lazy take. It's a bad take. Stop having that take.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, the reason James Franklin called a couple of bad timeouts earlier in his career and, you know, made some weird decisions earlier in his coaching career and got desperate in a couple of bad years, down years. And listen, if you want to beat that stuff, win. Yeah. The easiest way to beat that stuff is to win games. He knows that. I'm interested in how much he like listens to that stuff, tunes that stuff out.
James, come on the podcast.
Whatever. Yeah, this is a, you know, standing invitation to James Franklin whenever you want. You can come on the podcast and we could talk about life. Moving on, next question. Dan wants to know, what should I wear to Taylor Swift next Friday? Wear a Navarro Bowman Penn State jersey. You should do that,
Dan. She just did 3 nights in Chicago. 3 straight nights. And yeah. I take the train pretty much everywhere. And I've seen people like wear like cowboy boots and then like really like fun pink outfits too. And I know it's the Eras Tour, and like I get that, like, you know, what era are you going as? But it's really funny to see, like, in that, like, contained environment of, like, the concert. I'm sorry, that's really fun. But, like, just from, like, me, like, going to the grocery store, it's just really funny to watch people that look like they're going to very different events just interact with each other on the train. It's been really fun.
I saw a TikTok of, like, someone was at Wrigley or in Wrigleyville and was, like, this is normally bumping, but because Taylor Swift's here,
he says he's in Lincoln Park. He was not in Lincoln Park. That was Wrigleyville. It's different. That's not accurate. That made me so mad.
Anyway, I am going to Taylor Swift in Cincinnati at the end of the month. If you have recommendations on what I should wear, dear listener, please let me know.
What's your favorite T-Swift song? There's a correct answer here.
Oh. Cruel Summer. Tell me you don't like screaming
mean.
That bridge.
The answer is Mean. Mean is such a great song.
Mean is a very good song. Moving on to Robbie. Thoughts on with? God damn it!
You
thoughts
made on the Withy list. You could have taken this off
and convincing him to. I was going to try and keep a straight face. If you don't know what those words mean, you have a happier life than I do. Our final question comes from Chad.
Can you repeat Robbie's question? I think I cut you off.
Thoughts on Withy rizzing up baby Gronk and convincing him to commit to LSU?
Yes.
Do you know what that question of words
means? I'm a Zoomer. I do.
Okay. I was going to say, well, if not, we'll talk about it. I'm a millennial and I know what it means. Shut up. finally, moving on to a question. Question from Chad. Actually, a really timely question. Yeah. In a couple of ways, as the College World Series is going on right now, and Penn State actually just lost its baseball coach of the last decade in Rob Cooper, who announced his resignation. The question from Chad, do Penn State fans really care about college baseball? And he made it a point to stress that he meant college baseball, not Major League Baseball, because he doesn't want me ranting about the Yankees, which I won't do other than I'll say I want Aaron Boone to be thrown.
They're losing right now to the White Sox.
Doesn't surprise me. Aaron Boone's a joke of a manager and he's an embarrassment to the Pinstripes.
sorry, Chad.
Matt, this question, this is an interesting question because Penn State is such a unique school in a million ways that we've all gone over. It's a school of people made up from Philadelphia, which has the Phillies. It's a school of people made up of people from Pittsburgh, who have the Pirates, people from the tri-state area in New York, which has the Yankees and the Mets, people from the DMV, which has the Nationals, which has the Orioles. And it literally has a professional baseball team that plays on its campus in a beautiful stadium that is right next to its football field. And I would say that Penn State fans have a very similar transactional relationship with baseball that they have with basketball. And I think there are reasons for this, but I've always gotten the sense that like baseball at Penn State during my time as a student was like, if you get free tickets to the game, you go, you chill, you kick your feet up. But it's not something where it's like there is a baseball culture among Penn State. There's nothing like that.
I think it's tough. Like, first of all, baseball is a non-revenue sport, so there's not that much investment in it from the jump. Penn State's never been good, and it's cold in State College until like today, June, which already makes it tough. Personally, like I worked at a minor league baseball stadium in high school. Shout out to the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. Those games are like proper events. Like, they understand what the baseball is. And I think Penn State needs to understand what Penn State baseball is. And if they want to drum up that fan interest, which will then therefore bring in better players, I think you really have to make these games events. Like, the only real Penn State baseball thing I saw on the timeline this entire season was when they did Dollar Dog Day. And I saw people just trying to see how many hot dogs they could eat. Like, that's the kind of like cutesy stuff that Penn State has to do to market that program. I think fans could care. But in terms of like, what is that going to operate like in, even in like airtime on this podcast, it probably even then won't be much. That doesn't mean people can't care, but Penn State is to give them a reason to care, I think. And I don't know if Pat Kraft's the guy to do that, but I think he's the best shot they've had in a long time.
Yeah. And here's what I'll say. Cooper was an awesome coach.
Great guy.
He was a really cool, really personable guy. Played baseball at the University of Miami, was an assistant at the University of Miami, came from a Wright State school where he made the NCAA tournament with some frequency. I think he had some connections to the national baseball team. I'm now going to read his numbers. 18-32, 18-30, 28-27, 18-37, 13-34, 21-27, 10-5, which is canceled due to COVID, 18-24, 26-29, 25-25. He was an excellent ambassador for the university. You know, I spoke to him a couple of times, you know, when I was a student, and I spoke to his predecessor a couple of times, Robbie Wine, and I found Cooper to be a really nice, really engaging, really genuine dude. And he ran into the issue of Penn State's just not a very good baseball school.
Which is fine.
I think we'd all like
it's
it.
Hard for a Northern I think team to we be would, a good baseball school.
Yeah, I think we would all like it if Penn State was awesome at baseball. But there are just like issues beyond Penn State's control. Like, it's not like the Big Ten is some powerhouse baseball conference. I think like beyond Indiana, like, it's not exactly a – let me actually pull up the college.
Michigan made one a couple years back, but never got anywhere with it. Like, UConn is like the lone northern school that like routinely puts dudes out.
Yeah, and that's, you know, right there in the shadow of New York and right there in the shadow of New York and New Jersey. Let me see if I can find a – this is good podcasting. This
I can
is
talk
good
about
podcasting.
The
this is good podcasting.
Won today, 1-0 over the Detroit Tigers.
I'm good. You look at the Big Ten schools that are there that made it to the regionals this year. Maryland made it. They're an ACC school, or they have that ACC history. They've always been really good at that. I didn't mean for that to be the dig that it turned.
That's
into.
Amazing.
But what I mean is that ACC schools have always really valued like kind of these non-revenue sports. So Maryland made it. They got eliminated.
Maryland on your 13-year deal with ESPN that you're all trying to get out of.
Yes. Indiana, they made it. They couldn't make it out of the regional. You keep going through looking for Big Ten schools. Iowa got eliminated before the Super Regional. And yeah, that was it for the Big Ten. That was it for the Big Ten. And you look at the schools that ended up making it to the Super Regionals: Wake, Bama, Florida, South Carolina, Duke, Virginia, Texas, Stanford, LSU, Kentucky, Oral Roberts in Oregon, weirdly enough. Indiana State, weirdly enough. TCU, Southern Miss, Tennessee. That's a lot of schools from the South. That's a lot of schools from places where your season is not starting and the first 2 or 3 months of the year are played in super inclement conditions. So, yeah, I think Penn State fans, to turn this into a positive, we saw how passionate Penn State fans got over the men's lacrosse team when the men's lacrosse team made it to the Final Four and got ended up, you know, getting screwed over by the refs against Duke. I think that was last weekend. We've seen with sports like women's volleyball, where when that they are good, Rec Hall is a brutal place for other teams to have to go and play. We've seen it with other, you know, wrestling. We kind of take it for granted, but schools don't turn out for wrestling like Penn State does, and it is because of how excellent Penn State is at wrestling. So I think if Penn State fans were given something to cheer about with their baseball program, they'd be cheering about that like crazy. Care.
There's a market there. Small, but it's there.
Yeah. It's small, but it's the conversation we've had basically every sport but football over the years. Basketball is the big one. You win, people are going to come to games. So in the immortal words of Al Davis, just win, baby. Yeah, I think that's it for this edition of the pod. We went a little bit longer than I thought we were going to. Jesus. Matt, any final things to say before I wrap
Mega
things
Barnwell
up?
Has, of course, left the Penn State roster. You probably know that by now. Just didn't seem like it was going to work out. Best of luck to the kid. I hope he finds his way. I hope he goes on and has a productive career, or if he decides this isn't for him, best of luck, whatever is next for Mega Barnwell. So we're down another guy closer to the 85 scholarship limit. So the march of the season continues.
Slowly but surely. Thank you everyone as always for listening to this edition of the pod. As always, make sure you go wherever you go to get your podcast. Subscribe. If you can leave us a review, please go leave us a 5-star review, a 5-star rating, whatever.
We're still two away on Apple Podcasts from 100. So please leave your 5-star review there. Let's get up to 100.
Yeah. Head on. If you're interested in looking at us for some reason, head on over to YouTube. And of course, YouTube is always going to have a really vibrant community. Go subscribe to the podcast over there. Make sure you're following us at RLR blog on Twitter. And one last time, thank you very much to our sponsor, Home Field Apparel, for sponsoring the podcast. Use the promo code Roar Lions Roar. One word, all uppercase. If you are a new customer at Home Field Apparel, you get 15% off of your first order. One last time, thank you everyone for listening to this edition of Roar Lions Roar. For Matt Filipovits, I'm Bill DeFilippo.
Go Take State. Care, everyone.